sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
I want to start the show today by telling you about two upcoming events. First, on Thursday, March 3rd, we'll be showing the movie Deceptions, which was previously scheduled to be shown at the end of January, but was canceled due to one of those massive snowstorms. So the new date is Thursday, March 3rd, at 7 p.m. in the Wild Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford. The filmmaker Chris Pratt will be joining us to lead a post-film discussion, and here's what he has to say on his website, www.deceptionsusa.com. Life was so much better when I lived in the bubble, unaware that my freedoms had some very distinct boundaries. If I stayed in my sandbox, I was okay, but if I ventured out, if I became a critical thinker, read, questioned authority, thought beyond Democrat or Republican, realized that my opinions and perceptions were being managed by a corporate media, and that there was no public policy, only corporate policy, I became a subversive. But how could I reconcile continual war, wiretapping, unanswered 9/11 questions, torture, rendition, terrorism, the loss of freedom, police brutality, news suppression, the bailouts, evaporation of the public option, a toothless financial reform, no real audit of the Fed, BP's constant lies, political bribery, uncharged war criminals, and corruption beyond belief? My country was disappearing. How could I do nothing? Unfortunately, Deceptions is not a fictional piece. It's a documentary, a recording, an assembly of facts that are part of the historical record, including a public that is letting this happen. So please get engaged, read, watch a movie, get involved, and prove me wrong. So again, that's Thursday, March 3rd at 7 p.m. in the Wild Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford. And the second event in March is a one-day conference called Investigate Building 7. The Connecticut 9/11 Truth Group has been working in collaboration with the Building What campaign to organize this great event. The date is Saturday, March 26th, and it will be held in the Millard Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford. Some of the speakers will be Architect Richard Gage, AIA, founder of the organization Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Then we'll also have Kevin Ryan, who lost his job at United Laboratories when he began questioning their conclusions about the collapse of the Twin Towers. We also have attorney William Pepper, who represented the King family in the 1999 trial, which proved that James Earl Ray was innocent and that the real perpetrators involved the U.S. military, the FBI, the Memphis police, the mafia, and a local businessman. William Pepper wrote the book called An Act of State, The Assassination of Martin Luther King. We'll also have Graham McQueen. He's a Canadian professor of peace studies, now retired, and has done a lot of research on the eyewitness reports of explosions in the towers. We will also have with us victim family members Bob McElvain, who lost his son in the towers, and Manny Badillo, who lost his uncle. And then we'll have journalists Leslie Griffith and Mark Crispin Miller. And you're going to hear Mark Crispin Miller shortly, who gave a speech September 12, 2010, in New York City. This is going to be a great event, so mark your calendars. It's Saturday, March 26th at the Millard Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford. Tickets will go on sale shortly, and the box office is 800-274-8587. The website for the event is investigatebuilding7.org. It's still under construction, so check back in a few days for more complete details. And now you're going to hear the speech given by journalist Mark Crispin Miller in New York City on September 12, 2010 at the conference called How the World Changed After 9/11. Brian Madden introduces him, so let's get started with Mark Crispin Miller.
Mark Crispin Miller, the author of several books, including Boxed In, The Culture of TV, The Bush Dyslexicon, Observations on a National Disorder, Cruel and Unusual, Bush Cheney's New World Order, and Fooled Again, The Real Case for Electoral Reform. He is also the editor of Loser Take All, Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy, 2000 to 2008. His essays and articles have appeared in many journals, magazines, and newspapers throughout the nation and the world, and he has given countless interviews worldwide. Welcome, Mark Crispin Miller.
Thanks. Thank you. To sort of further Peter's point, I want to give you one of my favorite quotes from James Madison. And I may have to say it twice because the syntax is quite beautiful, but it's not exactly like a bullet point, okay? That is, the fetters on liberty at home have ever been forged out of the weapons used in defense against real, pretended, or imaginary dangers from abroad. Follow that? I'm going to say it again. The fetters, the chains on liberty at home have ever been forged out of the weapons used in defense against real, pretended, or imaginary dangers from abroad. That's a profound statement. And it, you know, kind of sums up, I think, the whole Republican ideology, small R Republican, that gave us the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and so on. But I want to focus on a couple of things, primarily having to do with this notion of real, pretended, or imaginary dangers from abroad, because it has everything to do with conspiracy theory. All right? Conspiracy theory. Think about that. Conspiracy theory functions as a most effective cudgel against anyone who tries even to discuss a certain range of stories, right? Conspiracy theory. You call somebody a conspiracy theorist, and you have very effectively neutralized them. Once a journalist, for example, gets to be defined as a conspiracy theorist, or professor, public intellectual, anybody, that person has been neutralized. And I would suggest that it's actually a much more efficient way to silence people than to have some goon come, you know, to their house at night and pop them. You know, it's a really clean, safe way to prevent people from listening to what you have to say. Now, the other day, I was privileged to moderate a press conference on the 9/11 subject, and one of our speakers was Lieutenant Colonel Shelton Lankford, who was a lieutenant colonel in the Marines, flew a lot of missions in Vietnam. He's part of the military community speaking out for a new investigation of 9/11. And he began by noting that his personal hero was Smedley Darlington Butler, right? Okay. Who was, as many of you appear to know, you know, a Marine general who, you know, I mean, his military record is constantly invoked in textbooks and curricula used to teach soldiers and officers how to fight and how to command and so on. But he's also famous for having blown the whistle on the so-called business plot in the 30s. Is a group of plutocrats, rich people, who asked him to function as the man on the white horse to lead an army of outraged veterans to Washington and depose Franklin Roosevelt and take over as dictator. And he actually blew the whistle on this, went to Congress and talked about it. Now, Lieutenant Colonel Lankford's point, which I think was extremely well taken, was that if Butler had stepped forward and said this today, he'd be dismissed as a conspiracy theorist. Okay? I think that's obviously true. But that raises the crucial question, when did this phrase suddenly become the means of choice for defining the all-important boundary line between conspiracy theories that we can all believe in, right? Like the official explanation of 9/11, or the international communist conspiracy, and those conspiracy theories that you know, by definition, we just aren't supposed to talk about. When did this happen? So I did some research, And I can tell you exactly when it happened. It happened in the mid to late 60s. All right? And I have some documentary evidence. If you do a search on the phrase conspiracy theory in the New York Times archives, you find that it's rarely used until that moment. And if you do a search at time.com, Time magazine, you'll find it's never used until that moment. Then it's used all the time. Okay? And I would suggest to you that the reason it becomes so frequent in journalistic circles is that this is going to sound like a conspiracy theory. That's the beauty of the tactic, isn't it? Right? But there is no doubt, because here is a declassified CIA memo that you can all get online. Thank God for the internet, right? It is number 104, 10404, 10376. It was dated January 4th, 1967. And it's sent out to all station chiefs worldwide about our concern. Our concern is that from the day of President Kennedy's assassination, there has been speculation about the responsibility for his murder. Okay? Specifically, there are a number of books that had just come out or were about to come out questioning the conclusions of the Warren Commission report. And the two books that most concerned the CIA were Mark Lane's A Rush to Judgment and Edward J. Epstein's Inquest. And let me say, by the way, that I'm not standing here telling you that everything in those books was great. I'm not even standing here giving you my own view on the Kennedy assassination. I'm not doing that any more than we're here to say we know 9/11 was an inside job. It's not the point. It's putting the cart before the horse. I'm simply pointing out that the CIA used its resources in a deliberate and systematic way to impugn these authors and these books. And you got to get a hold of this memo, because it indicates point by point precisely how the agency should use its friends in the press to attack these books. I'll read you a couple of examples. It'll sound very familiar to you. Okay? So, the mission is to employ propaganda assets to answer and refute the attacks of the critics. Okay? That's the first sentence in that paragraph. They elaborate on it. But here are the points they advise making. No significant new evidence has emerged which the commission did not consider. And they go on and on. That's A. B. Critics usually overvalue particular items and ignore others. Okay? C. Conspiracy on the large scale often suggested would be impossible to conceal in the United States, especially since informants could expect to receive large royalties, etc. D. Critics have often been enticed by a form of intellectual pride. They light on some theory and fall in love with it. They also scoff at the commission. I could go on. I urge you to read it yourselves. I'm simply suggesting that conspiracy theory became so current and a kind of a reflexive term for dismissing these kinds of counterarguments when it did with the help of the CIA, which is to say, with the help of the covert arm of the American government. Now, if you flash forward to the present, you'll see that the same basic rules are used to dismiss the work of, say, David Ray Griffin. Although I have to add that they never, ever actually grapple with any of the specifics in his books. Right? Never. It's just a kind of vague, snickering dismissal of anybody who would believe in this kind of thing, and a tendency to seize on some of the wackier assertions that some of the people affiliated with this movement have made, right? Because there are some. And then say, oh, look, they say that. Well, obviously, the whole thing is a bunch of crap. You see? Now, this response, this press response, has been used in many cases over the last few decades. I mean, there's the Kennedy assassination. Okay, it's conspiracy theory to argue with the claim that it was a lone gunman, etc. But the exact same arguments were used, and this will take some of us back, to dismiss the story of the October surprise, which involved the Reagan team meeting with the Iranians secretly during the 1980 presidential campaign to persuade them to hang on to the hostages long enough to get Ronald Reagan into the White House.
I wrote that book.
God bless you. And you're obviously nuts. Barbara Honegger, also Gary Sick. Let me say parenthetically that the journalist Robert Parry has been covering this carefully, and his website is consortiumnews.com. And the story of the October surprise is beyond argument true. All subsequent discoveries of evidence have borne it out. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's not a speculation. It's not that there's no evidence to support it. There is now abundant evidence to support it, but no one will revisit it. So it remains etched in the mass mind, which includes all of us or most of us, as just an unfounded rumor. Okay? Flight TWA-800. Very different kind of story, and Christina Borgeson was here yesterday to talk. Did she talk about that at all?
Yes, no.
Yes, no. Well, okay. Well, you know, in her book, Into the Buzzsaw, which I strongly recommend to all of you, there are no fewer than three essays on that tragedy in 1996. And these journalists' careers were ruined simply for having noted the evidence that that plane crashed as a result of a naval exercise gone wrong. In other words, it was an accident, and the Navy was responsible for that accident. That's what the evidence seems to suggest. But simply for pursuing the evidence, these journalists' lives were destroyed, their careers, I should say, were destroyed. But importantly, it was conspiracy theory. This was a conspiracy theory. Anyone who talks about it is a conspiracy theorist, you see? The CIA's drug smuggling. It's a story that was broken by Gary Webb. And as one, I'll get there, step by step, although you all know that he is dead. As one man, the mainstream media jumped on him and attacked him as a conspiracy theorist, as someone who had not made his case, who'd made this stuff up. They imputed positions to him that he hadn't taken. They said he was saying they deliberately addicted black Americans to crack cocaine to keep them weak. He never said any such thing. And then when the CIA's own Inspector General's report came out a little bit later, he realized, yeah, I got the story wrong. I'd vastly understated it. It was actually worse than I thought. He wrote a book about it called Dark Alliance, which got no reviews. He is now dead. He killed himself. Well, maybe not. All right, he's dead. He may not have killed himself. But let's not get pedantic, okay? Take my point? The point is that it is extremely dangerous professionally to a reporter to go into the territory where they've set up a lot of signs that say conspiracy theory, keep out. The Oklahoma City bombing, okay? I could go on and on with more of these kind of lurid examples, but let me give you one that's not so lurid, which is a story that has sort of consumed me for the last several years, and that's the evidence of widespread and continuing election fraud primarily by the Republican Party, okay? That this stuff has gone on, there is no doubt that it has happened time and time again in election after election from 2000 on, on a scale previously unimaginable even to the most corrupt politicians in our history, including Mayor Daley from my hometown of Chicago and Lyndon Johnson and other corrupt Democrats. What we've been witnessing really is a profound misrepresentation of our own collective will, that Americans, most progressives, most liberals, all liberals, believe that to talk about this is delusional. It's conspiracy theory. It's insane. And it's a view that Obama shares and the Democrats in Congress share. So that even as we speak, I mean, we're right in the midst of part of the groundwork for more electoral theft this November. Because the Tea Party's numbers and influence have been constantly exaggerated, you see? And I could tell you chapter and verse about recent elections or recent occurrences in various states that are not just fishy, but impossible. But that would take me off the subject. What I'm trying to suggest to you is this. Okay? I'm raising this question. Conspiracy theory springs so easily to the lips of so many reporters and to their fingertips as they work at the word processor for a range of reasons, okay? A range of reasons. There are the things that Joe talked about at the beginning. Journalism is in crisis. People are scared of losing their jobs. The last thing in the world you want to do is take some kind of a risk that might define you as a crackpot. So it's best to stay away from this stuff. See? There's also the fact that investigative reporting, as Joe says, is extremely expensive. It's not really cost effective. It takes a lot of work, takes a lot of money. Nobody will commit to that. And there are various other factors involved in the collapse of mainstream journalism. But I would suggest that the kind of intellectual timorousness, kind of civic cowardice that's involved here in shutting one's eyes to copious and specific evidence of these kinds of crimes can be helped along as well. See? And I would suggest that the kind of effort that the CIA made back in the late 60s to encourage their media assets to attack these writers for going too far, I don't think that necessarily ever stopped. You see? I think that kind of thing still goes on. So this is what I would urge. Okay, this is what I would urge today. We all have a tendency to marry ourselves to particular causes, don't we? I mean, I suppose everybody in the room here is probably pretty deeply committed to the 9/11 question. I know I am. But I've noticed that people tend to become a little bit protective of their cause. And I've heard people say, they've written to me to say, you know, I mean, I know you think election fraud is an important subject, and of course it is, but 9/11 is the real story. 9/11 is the real story, okay? Like, the fact that they stole the election that got them into a position to do that in the first place is immaterial. It doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is 9/11. Now, contrarily, I've had people say to me, you know, those 9/11 people, excuse me, those 9/11 people, I mean, you know, they're so busy, they're so over-focused on that. I mean, they don't look at the October surprise, for example. And that was crucial because that made Reagan president. That introduced the whole neocon movement. All right, the point here is that we cannot be this sectarian about all this. We have to be rational and we have to be patriotic and keep our minds open to the possibility that all these stories are important and all related, you know? Because we're talking about a sustained attack on American democracy. That's what we're talking about. A sustained, highly sophisticated attack on American democracy. This, okay, does not mean that we have to believe every conspiracy theory that comes along, because some of them are berserk. I mean, there are crazy people out there. Maybe the CIA is paying some of them. Now, who knows? But the fact is, it is extremely difficult to keep a clear sense of the distinction between truth and falsehood. It takes study. It takes work. It takes caution. It takes care. But it is necessary to do that, and it is necessary always to do what you all are doing and what Lenny and his team are doing and what we're all trying to do, which is to make sure that the American people finally hear that what they do in fact often suspect or intuit is based on facts, okay? Because it is not the case that everybody out there is tottering around like zombies with their heads filled with the 9/11 Commission report. They don't all buy that. You know, when somebody like Jesse Ventura comes out with a book that has a whole chapter on this and on the theft of the 2004 election, by the way, and it becomes a bestseller, although it gets no reviews, this means that people are listening, right? So that seems to me to be our job, is to find ways to tell people that what they have a hunch is the case is probably the case, and these are the reasons why. And this is where the scientific evidence comes in. This is where the archival evidence comes in. This is where the technical evidence of election fraud comes in. The eyewitness reports come in and all the rest of it. Because ultimately, as corny as this sounds, we are really fighting for truth and democracy, which is to say our freedom and self-government. And there's no reason to apologize for that. And that's not a conspiracy theory, okay? Thank you.
This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.